It's time for Wolo and Friends on Sports 56. Here is your host, the voice of the Tigers, Dave Woloshin.
Welcome in on a terrific Tuesday. Two NBA quarterfinals in the books. Goodbye, Los Angeles. Goodbye, LeBron. What will he do? That'll be interesting. Two series still tied. They are crazy. Cleveland and Detroit tied 2-2. Free throw discrepancy last night. Oh, my gosh. It was nuts. James Harden didn't look old for the first time in this series. And the Pistons couldn't get a call. First quarter, zero Cleveland fouls. Zero. The free throw discrepancy was like 30. I mean, it was crazy. And that series is tied. They'll play Wednesday. San Antonio, Minnesota tonight. And we'll see if Victor Wembanyama can keep his head on straight. Remember, he got actually kicked out of the game for a flagrant foul. Probably deserved it, but he'd been getting killed. I don't know. Landon Schmidt, is it me? Or do you agree that that officials are having more influence on games in these playoffs than usual? It seems to me that way. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind last night. First of all, after the Cleveland coach, Kenny Atkinson, had made the remark about how he thought his team was getting screwed on calls, and then every single call in Cleveland goes their way last night. They're playing, I mean, the Pistons are going to the hole, no call. And you touch Mitchell, you touch Harden, you're going to hear that whistle last night. Now, that wasn't like that in the first two games, so we'll see. But I thought his coming out and commenting that way changed the way the whistle blew last night. And I don't remember officiating playing as big a role as it has this year in these games.
Well, I think it's always been true that no matter what it is, people are always going to complain one way or another about officiating, no matter what the game is. I think that's just a reality of life at this point. I mean, a lot can be said about the way that the OKC's whistles have been going their way a lot more frequently than a lot of people would realize, so much so that the Lakers had a meeting with them after the game about how bad their calls were. So I think it's just, yeah, I mean, I think it's just the nature of the beast. I know it's always swayed the game, but I feel like it's kind of always been this way. Well, maybe it's been amplified. But
Minnesota Finch had it out with Tony Brothers. Brothers, I don't think, has roughed the game since then. And all of a sudden, Minnesota ties that series. I think it's a little weird. I don't remember officiating playing that role, but it does make Cleveland and Detroit, San Antonio, Minnesota pretty interesting as we see the Knicks, who to me are the best in the East. They await an opponent and an OKC, which is now 8-0 in the playoffs. I think the last time a defending champion went 8-0 the next year, you have to go back like 10-12 years. So we'll watch to see. It looks to me like, and I picked them to begin with, OKC, I think they will be good. Lane Kiffin took a shot at Ole Miss. Of course, he said it wasn't a shot. It was a shot. It's about diversity and how some players don't want to go to Ole Miss. And what is it? Oxford has only 26% black, like 68% white. And he points that out. But Baton Rouge is 52% black. Some guys wouldn't want to come. We're going to talk about that with Ron Higgins down in Baton Rouge. That'll come your way at about 10:28, and then Munsey will join us at the final segment of this program. There was a very interesting decision made by an arbitrator. We may get into this with Higgins, too. There are several Nebraska football players making more than $1 million in NIL money. Not anymore. There is, remember the College Sports Commission, CSC? They were put in place to monitor NIL. And they said that they didn't believe that Playfly Sports, which is basically the equivalent to Nebraska, what Learfield is to the University of Memphis. They own their rights, and they sell it, the media rights and signage and things of that nature. That particular entity was paying several of the Nebraska football players over $1 million. Those that were getting over $1 million, it was found through an arbitrator that was illegal payment. The arbitrator said the partner payoff is an acceptable partner, but the way they're paying, really no services rendered, is not in the spirit of the house agreement. Now, this is going to end up in court eventually, and it should. But this is the way that NIL is going to end up being limited, if the courts agree with what the arbitrator just said. And that's really, in my mind, what needs to happen. You've already got a $21 million in-place revenue share. If you want to have some legitimate NIL money that will go directly to a star, I get it. But $1 million without doing anything? Just because that's part of the deal? That's not what the spirit of the house agreement was, in my mind. And this is the way we're finally going to get maybe some sensible financial model. We'll wait and see, but it was really pretty significant, I thought. In the meantime, as I sit here in the Family Leisure Studios, and a reminder, summer's right around the corner. Time to get your backyard ready for all that big ultimate swim parties you're going to have. So they got above-ground pools that start now at under $4,000. That's with installation. In-ground pools starting at under $50,000. All in-stock patio furniture, I mean price to move. Five-piece patio furniture sets starting at $9.99. Outdoor sectionals start at $12.99. You get a free umbrella and base with select patio furniture sets. The hot tubs, they started under $35. Swim spas started under $17. Special financing, as always, is available. And mention this ad, $200 off on any pool or spa purchase. Just go see Billy or go see Lindsay. That is right there at I-40 and Witten Road. Special guest in the house today, that would be Miss Sports Lady. That's what she told me she is. I know her better as a two-time Olympic champion, and I did not realize this. She's held a track meet now for 36 years, May 23rd at MUS at 8:30 in the morning, her annual Rochelle Stevens track meet. Good morning, Rochelle. I can't believe you've been doing this 36 years. You look like you're 22 still.
Hey, I'll take 22 any day. You know, I started putting this meat on when I was just 5 years old.
Apparently.
So thank you very much for that compliment. I work real hard at it a little bit.
So how many people come to this thing? You've done it at various places. I remember it being at the which no longer is in existence, at the fairgrounds. That was a really good, by the way, track, and had the best lights of high school football stadiums. And then I think you've been to St. George's, you've been to Kirby, you've been to Hallie. What got you to MUS?
Hey, MUS is a beautiful campus, as we all know.
Yeah.
And it's just a great opportunity for my track meet to be held there. I've been out in Caryville for over a decade now. And at the track that we were using, they're getting a brand new track. So we had to find a new home. And MUS stepped up to the plate and said, hey, you're welcome to come over here. Besides, I normally host a two-day No Pain, No Fame sports camp at MUS after the track meet. So it wasn't really too complicated to get there, but I'm just honored to be able to celebrate 36 years. We normally average about 800 athletes, sometime 1,000. They come in from Alabama, Mississippi, Oklahoma, East and West Tennessee, Mississippi, Arkansas. So they come from a little everywhere. My meet consists of ages 2 to 75 years old. And a lot of state champs.
Two-year-olds.
You know the one that's running through the house, grandma and grandpa to chase after her. Hey, you might as well start your track career with me. So when you do make it to the Olympics, or when you do win your city championships, you can say, I won my first medal at the Rochelle Stevens Invitational Track Meet. Oh, doesn't that just sound so historic?
I hope so.
2 to 5 year-olds running 50-meter dash. And then after that, it goes up to the age of 75. So if you are running in the master's division or the senior games, a lot of those athletes come and participate, use my meet to see where they are. It's for beginners, people that never ran track ever. So like I said, it's ages 2 to 75 years old. And over 30,000 athletes have been through this program since 1990 when I started it.
30,000. Have you got Olympians?
Yes, we have some Olympians. We have a few of them out of Mississippi that end up, I think one of let me see, what is his name? Bianca Knight. Bianca Knight ran in my meet her senior year. She went to Texas. She had made 3-4 Olympic teams. She's a part of the American record team in the 4x100 meter relay. Wow. Now she has her own meet in Jackson, Mississippi. It's a lot of Olympians used to come here and compete in my meet. Mm-hmm. When I was competing, they tried to show me up in my own track meet.
How'd they do?
Oh, they didn't win, but I just wasn't planning on running that fast.
Yeah, right.
Considering I had been walking all day getting the meet prepared, and they'd been sitting at the hotel with the legs crossed. But we have had dozens of Olympians to compete in my meet in the past, and we have so many Olympic hopefuls. So right now we're focusing on the introduction of track and field, seeing if this is something you may like to do. There are so many opportunities because we do invite college coaches and scouts and recruiters. They do recruit from my meet. A lot of athletes have earned scholarships because of my track meet. Say if you're a late bloomer and you didn't really run as fast as you should have earlier, how hard is it for me to call the great Carl Lewis that has 9 gold medals and a silver medal? How hard is it for me to call Leroy Burrell? Or how hard is it for me to call Chandra Cheeseboro, any of the top coaches, whether you at Georgia, USC, UCLA, most of the coaches are my colleagues. It's not hard to make that call. So if you have the GPA and you're running really hot and you just bloom late, you have a really good chance of getting somewhere, because all I have to do is just make a call or put in a letter of recommendation. And most of the time it's accepted. Just make sure you do your part. So that's what the Rochelle Stevens meet is all about.
So this thing on the 23rd at MUS, how many different events are there? What are they?
Our events are basically all running events. We start out with the Shelby County Sheriff's 1500 meter run, and McGruff will be out there passing out little badges to the kids and, you know, taking a bite out of crime. McGruff was the winner of the 50 meter dash, even though they said he cheated because he was running in tennis shoes and all the other mascots had on the big, big shoes. So McGruff was banned from the Rochelle Stevens meet for cheating. But anyway, the 1500 meters, 100, 200, 400, 800. We had a 4x100 meter relay, the 4x200 meter relay, the 4x400 meter relay, shot put, discus, and long jump, and the 50 meter dash. So believe it or not, we're finished around about 4:30, 4:45 before you can bend over. It's like off the track, next race. You don't have to wait all day to see that you got 15th place or 20th place. But if you win your heat, you won at my meet. So the top three finishers get medals, and fourth through sixth place receive ribbons. And it's just a great introduction. We have so many local track clubs that come as well. And if you see that you're smoking somebody, you might just join one of their clubs and get some real training and compete in the summertime and have an opportunity to go to the AAU Junior Olympics. And that's how I got my start.
So I'm assuming that the times that you have, those are accepted, credible times that could be given to show a college coach or given to compete in an AAU.
Correct. My meet is sanctioned by the AAU Junior Olympics. Okay. We are sanctioned and we have insurance. So it is sanctioned. You can qualify at my meet. Your times are accepted. But you have to make sure you're a member of the AAU or a member of USA Track and Field. You have to make sure you're a member before you step on the track so your time can count. You can't say, oh, okay, I ran this at Rochelle, but I wasn't a member. You got to be a member. And most of them all know the rules.
What does it cost to become a member?
I think it's about $20, $18 to $20.
So it's not crazy expensive.
No, it's not. That's just for the membership to become a part of the AAU Junior Olympics, and it automatically comes with insurance to cover those athletes for practices and travel.
How good is the Memphis track scene? I know your meet, and I know Eddie Murphy's got a meet that he brings people in. I'm sure there's a lot more. Memphis has a track team. Rhodes has a track team. I'm certain CBU probably has a track team. Is it good? Are we healthy?
You know, we are halfway healthy. you know, the season is so short. And by the time you start running fast, your season is basically over. We don't have any indoor facilities, so that's what pretty much hurt us, especially with our times being compared to the people in California, Florida, Texas. Of course, they're running faster. They have nice weather majority of the time.
Right.
And then a lot of those places even have indoor tracks. Memphis, we don't have an indoor track.
Not one.
Not one track here. And that was one of the challenges I had when I was training for the Olympics, not having anywhere to train. Of course, I was banned out of all the places that did have a piece of a track, you know, 120 meters, like French Riviera Spa and some other places that's no longer open. I was banned. They was like, you're running too fast, you're scaring the customers, and don't come back here.
Wow, you know? Really?
And so I was forced to train in the elements, and my mindset was, you know, a real champion believes in themselves even when no one else does. So it doesn't matter if it's cold, hot, windy, rainy. We trained in the elements, and my mother and I, we made history together as the first mother-daughter team to go out and make all of these championship teams. And I have medals in every major competition in the world, being ranked top 10 in the world for over a decade. So I had a very prosperous career, you know, just too bad the NILs wasn't quite around.
No, you'd have met a ton.
Technically, I am one of the original NIL people. I was on contract with Maybelline. I did a contract also with Sara Lee Corporation International Paper. I was the Nike girl for 2 decades. I've been on contract with Oakley Sunshades. And so I had over 35 contracts.
What are you doing with all your money, Rochelle?
Oh, well, that's why I still look young and look good. I spend it on myself. Yeah. I spend time at the gym in the steam room, the dry sauna, the jacuzzi. It's called the executive workout. No more hard running and 2,000 sit-ups anymore.
Wow. Best track in Memphis. Where is that?
I would say we have a selection now because Whitehaven's been resurfaced. Halley has been resurfaced. I haven't been to all of the tracks, but I know those two tracks have been resurfaced, so they should be faster. Houston has been resurfaced, and people are breaking records left and right. Christian Brothers now has a new track. Last year, I believe somebody came to Memphis and just got all the money because everybody got a new track last year. And I was like, wow, I wonder who that person was. I mean, they did a good job. And even St. George's is on the list to get a new track as well. So all of those tracks are nice. Harding Academy has a nice track. We have nice facilities now without the potholes like the Memphis streets. So it's pretty decent around here now.
That's exciting. Well, you got the L.A. games coming up.
Of course.
In a bit. I just saw a piece on 60 Minutes on an Australian guy who is unbelievable. His name is Gout. He's now 18. Mm-hmm. Is he going to break all the world records? Is he the next sensation?
Well, they are predicting him to be the next Usain Bolt.
Yeah.
And Gout is really fast. He's tall, lanky, skinny, and real fast. The only concern I would have is just making sure he stay injury free. And he's about to go to college, so the critics are saying that he just needs to stay in Australia and do what he's doing that's making him successful versus going to a college here in the United States. Because if you come here, oh, we're going to run you. You're going to run everything. You're going to run the 100, the 200, the 4x100, the 4x200. You even going to run the 4x400 and the 400. He might burn out
right. If
he comes to the United States. And the critics are believing that may happen to him. So we're just waiting to see if he's going to stay in Australia and train, or if he's going to come to the United States, because Australia has a famous Olympic gold medalist, Kathy Freeman, and she was in my event, and she won at the 2000 Olympics in Sydney at 400 meters. And Australia hasn't had anything sensation since Kathy Freeman. So maybe he would be the one. But Gout, he does have talent. But if you look at it, this whole generation are running so much faster because they have better shoes. They got springs in their shoes. Some of these tracks they are even making have banks on the outside. Like, so when you run indoors, you got the bank and it throws you down the straightaway. Right. And so now they have these banks outside that's throwing you down the straightaway. So I'm like, okay, that's kind of like cheating. But anyway.
So that's why we're getting all these new world records.
We're getting all these. They're not quite breaking world records. You know, they are running extremely fast. But, you know, their workouts, I don't think their workouts are as brutal as the workouts we did in the 80s and the 90s and early 2000s. And that's why our records are still standing, because we really worked out hard. They just have utensils and equipment to help them. So if they were to take our mentality and work their butts off like we did, along with the equipment, our records would be gone. But since they don't have that work ethic, we're not going to encourage them to break our records. I mean, my records are still standing at Morgan State since 1985.
Right? Wow.
I'm not encouraging anybody to break my records.
Who besides Gavgat? That's obviously an Australian. Give me an American or two to look for.
Well, right now we still have Noah Lyles, who is very competitive. I like Noah. He brings a lot of energy to the sport. He knows how to provoke people. But I believe if he was in our era, his little provoke, he would get provoked, because our era was more mentally tough than this generation. But Noah is very exciting to watch. Some of the others, it's so many new ones that are now coming.
What about the woman sprinter that didn't get to participate in one games because
Sha'Carri.
Yeah.
Sha'Carri Richardson.
Yeah.
You know, I saw her race somewhere overseas this year on YouTube, and that's the best I have seen her look ever. I mean, she had speed, she had turnovers, she's got strength, the determination is there, and she was running on grass. Who does that, you know, other than the Australians and the athletes from Trinidad and Tobago? But she looked extremely well. And the women 100 is going to be exciting, because when you have training partners and everyone running close to world record times, which the 100 meters belong to FloJo, who was in my era, 10.34. When you have excellent training partners, and not to mention their coach is my colleague as well, the great Dennis Mitchell, who has several world records along with Carl Lewis and that crew. That's their coach. So when you have one of the greatest 100 meter runners coaching you, giving their secrets, their mind games, their mindset, their workouts that made them great, you're supposed to be awesome. And so I'm looking forward to that. And I just feel like when I see Gabby Thomas run and Sydney McLaughlin and Melissa, who just won the championship, and some others, their coaches are my colleagues. I feel like I'm their auntie. I'm like, yes, that's Quincy Watts. Boy, I got to cheer for Michael Norman in the 400. Oh my gosh, that's Carl Lewis, athlete. I got to cheer for him. I cheer for them because who coached them? And we expect them to step up to the plate and to be the very best that they can be. And I believe LA is going to be an exciting 2028 Olympics, since 96 was last in the United States. Yeah. And that's the one where I got my gold medal.
Last thing, quick. Greatest male sprinter, Carl Lewis, Usain Bolt. Who would you say is the greatest male that you've seen?
Well, I just only seen Usain on television, and he's very electrifying to watch and see. So I never put anybody down. I just say he's the greatest in his era. And Carl Lewis was the greatest in his era. And Jesse Owens was the greatest in his era. Yep. And Bob Haynes. And so I never would say they're the greatest, because they never had the opportunity to run against each other. You know, I would go to competitions and they would say, hey, you know, the girl, she ran a 48 second in the 400 2 days ago. She's going to be in your race. And I used to say, I don't care. But did she run it against me? And with my mindset being like that, maybe she had a bad day, but they never seemed to run those times against me, because my mindset was prepared for that. And so I always just respect all athletes for their era, how great they were and how great they are. And I just respect the talent and the hard work that everyone puts into it.
Other than yourself, female, FloJo? Got to be FloJo. Come on.
Oh, FloJo. Hey, most definitely. and I was in her era. Yeah, okay, she had on those beautiful suits and those super long nails. I mean, I had long nails and long hair, but when she came out with a Victoria's Secret lace bodysuit that I saw that I was going to just wear to bed, and she wore it on the track, I went, "Whoa, that is awesome!" I mean, she was beautiful, she was classy, elegant, and very talented. But Jackie Joyner Kersee was one of the greatest, and Evelyn Ashford was also incredible.
Yeah.
So to me, I looked up to all of those athletes, and they would say, how can you look up to them and you in the same era with them? Well, they were my motivation, because when Carl Lewis showed up at the Madison Square Garden at the Murals games, he had on a lone mink coat. And he came to the start line, and he had these beautiful girls on each side, and they removed his mink coat. And he blew everybody out in the 55 yards inside. And I said, wow, now I want to be like that.
he was pretty special. There's no doubt about it. So are you, Rochelle Stephen.
Thank you so much.
Good luck. MUS, 8:30, still time to come. And get in if you want to try?
Sure, most definitely. You can just go over to RochelleStevensFoundation.com. That's RochelleStevensFoundation.com to pre-register. That's going on until Friday, May 15th, the pre-registration. And, hey, you're welcome to sign up after that. It's just going to be $5 extra to all the late birds. We would take your money even at the gate. It's $5 for the spectators. You can get your tickets at eventbrite.com, eventbrite.com, and just look for Rochelle Stevens Track Meet. We're looking forward to a great crowd, great weather, and great competition. So come on out. Bring your family and win yourself a gold medal.
There you go. Thank you, Rochelle. We appreciate it. Always good seeing you.
Thank you so much, Dave.
We got to take a break. We're heading to Baton Rouge. Ron Higgins, our SEC historian, is next.
You have opinions?
I think it's over.
Of course you do.
I don't think it's that simple.
Everyone does.
I got all the answers.
Hit us up on the Sissy's Log Cabin listener line at 360-8255. And so on Sports 56, here once again is the voice of the Tigers, Dave Woloshin.
Welcome back in. We're heading to Baton Rouge. Ron Higgins is standing by. He's brought to you by one of his favorite places. That's Miramichi, the complete golf experience. It's not in Millington. Ladies and gentlemen, it's in Woodstock. That's 25 minutes from my driveway in East Memphis. I promise you, I do it all the time. 25 minutes for the complete golf experience. The best practice facilities of any public golf course, including a sand trap to learn how to hit out of, the biggest putting green, and a major league driving range. You want to learn the game, you can do it there. And then there's the beautiful golf course that can go back 7,000 yards, or when you get older like me, you move up to about 5,800, 6,000 yards. That's the perfect way for me to go. Here's the one common denominator besides the competition. It's the beauty. It is a beautiful golf course. The back nine has this stream that goes back and forth as you go, and hills, and it's a beautiful experience. The deck on top of 9 and 18, the best view in Shelby County. The clubhouse has a complete bar and food and good people. Tell them we sent you. You will love it, I promise. That's Miramichi. So we're going to Baton Rouge, and I got to ask, because the guest that I just had in here, Ron Higgins, said that you would be the first one to have an AARP card, and that you would be like retired, and this particular person is still going strong. You have any idea who I'm talking about?
I have no idea who that'd be.
Well, let me tell you this. You went around the world to cover her.
Oh, Rochelle.
Yes. That's exactly right.
Yeah, you tell the old lady of track.
The old he just called you the old lady of track, Rochelle. Oh my gosh!
You know what? You know what? But I tell you what, she still looks good.
She does. She's not listening in.
Rochelle, I don't have. I'm not retired. I'm still writing, and I'm waiting for your comeback. So before I die, I'll cover you in the Senior Olympics. How about that?
Well, you can cover Allyson Felix. She will be 44 years old. I'm not going to go out there and mess up my good reputation of winning a comeback and be called Grandma.
Anyway, that is good stuff. All right, I got to ask you about this an incredible Lane Kiffin comment pertaining to how he could not get players because of the diversity that he's got at Baton Rouge that he did not have at Ole Miss. He lost African-American potential stars because they didn't want to come to Oxford, but they will come to Baton Rouge. I found it to be a pretty interesting comment. He said, I'm not taking a shot at Ole Miss. Those are just the facts. Give me your thoughts about the guy who just can't help but put the spotlight on himself.
Probably every Ole Miss coach ever been there has said that. You said excuse. That school has worked so hard. But there's some things you can't change. Look, I mean, they're going to have the damn Confederate flag, okay? Somebody's going to carry it. You can't stop them carrying the Confederate flag. They quit playing Dixie. I mean, they try to be as diverse as possible. And all these grandparents are hooked up on the Mississippi of the 60s. I'm going to say this. I'll feel safer in Oxford, Mississippi than I do in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I mean, the crime here is much worse. I mean, Oxford has basically no crime. So, I just don't understand why Lane has got to keep talking. And you know what? I tell you one thing about him, though. He owns everything he says. I mean,
well, here, let me give you the quote. Let me give you the quote. He says this to Vanity Fair, too, okay? He goes, I got this I had this happen with several high-profile recruits. Hey, coach, we really like you, but my grandparents aren't letting me move to Oxford, Mississippi. Then he goes, that doesn't come up when you say Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Parents were sitting here this weekend saying the campus's diversity feels so great. It feels like there's so no segregation, and we want that for our kid because that's the real world. So after the interview, Kiffin followed up with Vanity Fair to state he wasn't trying to take a shot at Oxford. He was simply relaying conversations he had while coaching there. Quote, I just hope my comment comes across respectful to Ole Miss. There are some things that I'm saying that are factual. They're not shots. Sounds to me like it was a shot.
Some grandparents still say that. I'm sure they do, but not all of them. If all of them said that, he wouldn't have had the team he had last year, you know?
Right.
This sounds like just purely recruiting rhetoric to me. But again, here's a guy who he didn't say I was misquoted. He didn't say – I don't think Lane Kiffin's ever said he's been misquoted because when he says something, he usually sticks by it. I mean, he'll stick by this. And look, there's still a segment that believe that, Mississippi now is a Mississippi of the 60s and the grandparents who remember what happened there. But that's so far gone, and Ole Miss has done a tremendous job they used to play, Dixie at games and have been there, played for a long time. You can't stop, you can't stop students from bringing Confederate flags to games. You can't stop that. That's just the way it is. But I know this. If that was true, what he said, it might be in a few cases, but if it was a massive deal where a bunch of people said that, he wouldn't have the team he had last year.
That's a great point. And, maybe he's in a recruiting war with Golding over somebody, so he brings this up to let those parents know, we got more African-Americans here than you got in Oxford, and this is the real world here. I found it intriguing. I also found intriguing, and I know we talked a little bit about this story, the group that is called the College Sports Commission, CSC, which is supposed to be the ones that monitor NIL money, they went to an arbitrator to say what is happening with Nebraska football, several making over $1 million from their equivalent of the Learfield, Play Fly Sports, is illegal payments, that they are an acceptable partner to pay, but the way that they're paying, the amounts that they're paying, is not in the spirit of the House Court Agreement. This is going to end up in court someday, but right now that limits Nebraska on paying the money they promised they were going to pay certain football players. What do you think is the outcome of all this? And is this what we need to really kickstart some sort of fiscal responsibility and a sustainable financial model for college football and basketball?
Well, yeah, it's what you need, but it's probably, I mean, it's going back into the courts again. I mean, and this will be fought hard. I mean, it's going to go to the House now, I think, that's where it's supposed to go. It's going somewhere. It's going. I know they got another shot at this to take it, you know, further. You know, right now they won this case, but we're talking about all their other ones. So I think it'll be fought hard. I mean, yeah, this is a step forward. If they can stick with this, this would be a big help. It really would. But, yeah, just know this. Forever, if guys want to get paid, they're going to find a way to pay them. Back when you couldn't pay guys, they found a way to pay them. They'll find a way to pay them now.
I'll give you a real quick
example. Back in the day when you wanted to buy a player, you could do something simple as player goes out to his mailbox one day. He has, like, 10 postcards and 10 cards, happy birthday cards, all with $1,000 bills in them, unsigned, no return address, and I might say, go Rebels, or go Tigers. You know, get the hint? Yeah. I mean, the kid can't return the money. If 10 fans in one school send them a bunch of money, wink, wink.
Right.
Well, you can't give it back.
The kid's never returning the money. He's just hoping nobody knows he's getting the money.
That's right. He can't give it back. And that's how you can buy a player if you want to. I just think no matter what kind of rules you have for the eternity, they're going to find a way to pay a player. And now that you can pay players, they're going to find a way they can get them the money. I mean, a lot of money. Outbid people. So I'm skeptical. I am.
Well, now that it's really pro, I do think there has to be a model that's sustainable. And this may be accomplished through the courts. There are still maybe some isolated cheating, I would agree, but I don't think you can do that on a total front. Remember, when the cheating was really going on, and it was probably going on at most places, but at the really successful places that have a lot of money with really rich and crazy boosters, they were the ones that were paying the big money. You know, you might have gotten a $100 hand check every once in a while if you were a Memphis athlete. It was a lot more money at Alabama, I can promise you that. Ron, we got to run. Thank you much. As always, I appreciate it. We will talk next Tuesday.
All right, Wallo. Take care. We'll see you.
Thank you. That is Ron Higgins, our SEC historian down in Baton Rouge. When we come back, we're headed to right across the border. Munzee, the beat writer from the Commercial Appeal on the Tigers, talks Memphis basketball in just a minute.
Add a little fun to your lunch break. Join Johnny Radio for Sports 56 Happy Hour from 11 to 1 every weekday on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Friends on Sports 56, here once again is the voice of the Tigers, Dave Woloshin.
All we hear is radio.
Welcome back in. Let's head south of the border. Our man Jason Munn standing by. We'll talk a little Tiger basketball with Jason. So the one thing missing, I think you would agree with me on this, besides the Cornelius Williams, is another big. They got to have a big who is maybe a rim protector, another rebounder to go with Williams. Has there been visits? How close are we? Good morning, Jason Munns.
Good morning, Dave. There have been visits. There were a couple of visits last week. They had Ibrahim Suare, who had played last year at Syracuse. Ultimately, he committed to Pitt. He was a 6'9", kind of a power forward type guy. And on the same day, they also had Maper Maker, who
I remember
from
that, yeah.
Family of Makers that are so well known in basketball. He's a class of 2025 guy who played his last year in the States at Bella Vista Prep in Arizona, and played last year at a post-grad program in Australia. He left here without committing and went on a visit to Arkansas over the weekend. As far as I know, he's still on the board. As far as I know, like, he's not committed anywhere or signed anywhere. So
would that be a good get?
I think it would be fine. I don't know that it you know, I'm skeptical that would be somebody who could step into the rotation from the beginning. That's my take on that one. Last I checked, Memphis did not have any other visits that were firm, that were, you know, totally set up and on the books. But they are actively looking. It is no secret that Memphis has to shore up the front court options that they have, because they are pretty limited there right now.
What about this kid that was at FAU, Maxim Lauge? Looks like Jalen Duren, although Jalen Duren looked terrible last night, by the way. He's built like Jalen Duren, 6'9", 260. He's a guy that I've heard has been around Melian Martinez, who's from Louisiana Tech. I know he's a shot blocker. I don't know if he does much else. Besides that, those two guys, anybody else that you think would be in the run here? And does Memphis have enough NIL money to pay the big bucks they need for a big, important big guy?
Yeah, I mean, I think those two those two names that you just mentioned are certainly in the conversation. I think they are on Memphis's board. Martinez is a 7-footer who from the Dominican Republic. He was at Louisiana Tech last year, as you mentioned. Didn't score a ton, didn't rebound a ton as far as, like, when you look at the numbers, but he also didn't play a ton either. He was, like, somewhere around, I think, 12, 13, 14, 15 minutes a game, something like that.
Well, wait. How good was Louisiana Tech last year that they got a 7-footer who has all these blocks and these limited minutes and they don't play him a lot? That worries me right there, buddy.
Yeah, who knows? That's going to take a little bit more research to figure that out, what's going on there, or what went on there. He finished with 50-plus shot blocks. I think he was block shots. I think he was – it was – his average was like 1.6 or 1.7 a game, which in those limited minutes is pretty good. It does make you wonder, you know, what was – going on there when he wasn't playing very much, and yet, you know, he was protecting the rim really, really, really well, and just still wasn't able to find the minutes there. I don't have to look into that a little bit deeper, but you know, he is a name that is out there, as well as Maxim Lauge. He was at FAU last year. He was at Oregon State the year before that. He had committed and he was locked in pretty much to North Carolina, but there have been some academic issues that have popped up that will prevent him from going to North Carolina. You know, he's a guy who had a really, really good game against Memphis down in at FAU, the game at FAU last season. He played 13 minutes. He had 6.7 boards and 3 steals. He's a pretty good piece if you can get him eligible and you can get him on top of it.
I find that interesting. Did his academic woes happen last year at FAU then? Is that the issue?
That is what the, you know, sort of the word on the street is, yes. That, you know, there are some rumblings out there that have cast some doubt as to whether or not he'd be eligible anywhere, not just North Carolina,
right,
but anywhere. Next year. Now, I can't confirm that. I don't know that, but I do know that Memphis is taking a very, very long, hard look at him, and so, you know, we'll see where that goes. But and then the part you asked about NIL. Now, I believe, you know, the impression that I have right now as we sit here today is that Memphis is in really good shape with, you know, from a financial standpoint. You know, they've got two spots left open on the roster, and Penny was on with you late last week, and he said that he was probably just going to fill one of those two spots, like, immediately, and that he was going to keep that last one open in case, you know, something popped.
Naquan Tomlin came around or somebody like that.
Yeah, or if they pass that 5-for-5 rule.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That somehow makes, you know, somebody who wasn't going to be eligible this year, and somehow that makes them eligible next year, you know. I think he's, it sounds like, based on what he told you, is that he's, you know, gonna leave that door open, so to speak. But no, I think they're fine, you know, by and large, from a financial standpoint.
Yeah, well, he basically said, I want to have $10 million, because that's what it takes to make the Sweet 16. I don't know how close he is to that. I know he's really working it. I think he's working harder this offseason than he's ever worked before. But he'd like to get to 10. He thinks to win a national title, it takes 20. I love the 5-year rule. I really do. It makes sense to me. I don't care if a guy now plays 5 years. It may skew some records. That's fine. That would be in there forever then, and there's no more of this, you know, finagling around with gray shirts and red shirts and blue shirts and everything else that was, you know, just in the mix. You got 5 years. 19 to 24, or whenever you start, you got 5 from the beginning to the end, and that's it. If you play all 5, great. If you get injured, you play 3. That's just tough luck, but that's the way it would work, and that would cap it off at age 24. I think that's what college sports should be.
Yeah, I do too. It would you know, take away some of these more entertaining storylines, like, for instance, Antoine Jones. Memphis fans should remember him.
Yeah, I do.
He's applying for a 9th year. He was with a program last year as an 8th year whatever player.
And he wants one more.
Yes, he is going to apply for, probably already has applied for a 9th year. So, like, those types of highly entertaining stories would cease to exist with this new rule, but I think that's 100% a good thing. Like Penny said it on your show last week, like, stop these guys, you know, who are 25, 26, 27 years old from coming back to, you know, from sticking around college just for the NIL. You would remedy that, and I think that's something that will make things a lot better.
Well, that's what's crazy. Andrew Jones gets 8 years, once a 9th, and Dane Danger couldn't get a 5th.
Yep. It's hopefully it doesn't open up any new cans of worms, because it seems like no matter what the NCAA does, there's going to be a new can of worms that pops open. But yeah, like for all of the, you know, it won't just cure, you know, the Antoine Joneses of the world. It will also hopefully help situations like the Dane Danger situation, where you don't have to jump through crazy hoops to get something that you probably deserve anyway.
Well, and if you're a coach, you're going, well, I know the NCAA is not granting anything. We got the rule. Kid's 24, that's it. Or he's played 4 years, he gets a 5th. He's not getting a 6th. Right.
Yep.
And so you can plan your team accordingly. I remember, honestly, 2 years ago, maybe even further, Ryan Silverfield talking with us about this in one of our production meetings. And he felt like for sure it was going to happen. And now it just sure kind of seems that way, that it could happen. When would this be put in effect? Do you have any idea?
I think it would happen immediately. I think it would go into effect for this next, the 26-27 athletic season. That's my understanding, is that it would immediately
take effect this year.
Yeah, that's my understanding. Wow. Is that it would take effect immediately. And
so a guy like Tyler Weeks, who you wrote a great story and lost 80 pounds. I never knew that until I read your story. So this guy, we think, is in his last year, but if this rule came out, Memphis could have him for 2 years?
That would be right, and he wouldn't be the only one. Trying to think, it would extend everybody. Like, Brandon Cummings is going into his 3rd year, so he's got 2 seasons left. Well, if this rule goes into effect, he would have three seasons left.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so on and so forth. Like it goes down the line. I'm trying to think off the top of my head if anybody else is going.
Well, Thetford was a sophomore, so he'd be a junior. He'd have 3 years to go.
Yes, he would have three more years. I'm trying to think. Jaden Reed, who is about to play his fourth season of college, would get an extra year
So you'd get your point guard for 2 years, provided they want, you know, then they're going to be looking for more money if they have a good year. Isn't that the way it works?
Right. Yeah, for sure. It does create some new possibilities.
Yeah. Week seems like the real deal. You know, he talks a good game. Like I said, he's really thinned down, and that made him even more attractive to Penny.
Oh, yeah. He is, you know, the thing that I find really, really interesting about him is that he is sort of, you know, from a frame standpoint, from a size, a dimensional standpoint, he's kind of like David Jones. Like if we're sort of comparing him to, comparing him dimensionally to other Tigers in recent memory, he's kind of like David Jones, and you know, I don't think he shoots the three as well as David. But if he
can score like David and at least pretend to play defense, which David didn't do except maybe a couple of steals, that would be really good.
Yeah, and from a play style standpoint, though, he's a little bit closer to PJ Haggard. Like PJ loves to get downhill and loves to, you know, he's not afraid of contact. And, I mean, they don't call Tyleek Weeks bully for nothing. Like, that's what he does. He puts his head down, and he will do whatever it takes to get to the rim. And if he has to go to the free throw line, he shot 82% there. And, he is inarguably going to be the guy on this team next year.
He's the alpha.
From a standpoint of, like, when you need a bucket, you're going to put the ball in his hands more often than not. Not every time, necessarily. I think Brandon Cummings has some, you know, like, he's got some real scoring ability. Brandon Cummings does. And Jaden Reed has some real scoring ability.
Yeah. According to your article, he's a score first guy, but he did have five assists in the Big Ten. In the meantime, as always, you are on the money, and we will talk a little schedule next week because that seems to be the most brutal in the Penny Hardaway era. So I appreciate it, buddy. We'll talk next Tuesday.
All right. Thanks, Waldo.
That is Jason Munns from The Commercial Appeal. He's brought to you by Ken. That's Ken Garland, Custom Home Builders. We're talking third generation Williams in the business now. This thing, we're talking 80 years of building dream homes or maybe you love where you are, but you want modern amenities. You love your lot. You love your location. But you want the California closets. You want the island in the kitchen. You want the media room with the speakers in the wall. That's Ken. He understands just how to make all those modern amenities fit your house and just make it feel like a home. He's been doing it again with his dad. This thing's been around 80 years. Go to kengarland.com. You'll see what I'm talking about. And then call him. He loves to chat. He sees all the little details in the big picture all at once. So if you're ready to build that dream home or you want a renovation with innovation, there's only one place to go, Ken Garland, Custom Home Builders. That'll do it for us. Usual show tomorrow, Dennis Phillippe in the house, Joe Denk in the house, and that will be followed by our golf picks. We got the PGA this week to talk about. Johnny, your radio's next. Have a great day, everybody.